From KMXT and Kodiak, this is the Alaska Fisheries Report. I'm Jay Barrett. Coming up this week, Icicle will be headed back to Adak this summer and trying to figure out how to keep those pesky whales from stealing your catch. Coming up on the Alaska Fisheries Report.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by Alaska Boats and Permits, marine broker for vessels, permits, and IFQs. 1-800-992-4960 or online at alaskaboat.com.
Federal and state health officials say North Pacific fish are so unlikely to be contaminated by radioactive material from the crippled nuclear power plant in Japan that there's no reason to test them. Dangerous levels of radiation have been reported off the coast of the Fukushima reactor complex, however. But a spokeswoman for the Federal Food and Drug Administration tells the Anchorage Daily News that the ocean is so huge and Alaska fisheries so far away, there's no realistic threat. Alaska's Food Safety Program Manager Ron Klein says the FDA and the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration have demonstrated that Alaskans have no cause for worry. Klein says that based on the work they're doing, no sampling or monitoring of our fish is necessary. The West Beam Canal sacro herring fishery wrapped up after 3 days. Fish and Game Commercial Fisheries Management Biologist Scott Walker.
Everything looks to be finished. So we had like a quarter of a mile or less, probably an eighth of a mile or so spawn in Valner Bay. All the other areas in West Beam Canal seem to be done. And so at this stage, we are assuming the major spawning event is over. There's just a very little fish in the area left, so any fishing that would occur on the little bit that's left would be have a lot of spawn outs and that sort of thing. So we talked to our local processor that's involved with the fishery. They're not going to be involved anymore. They're not going to buy any more fish. So basically everything is done.
The commercial fishery was officially opened a week ago Monday, but gill netters didn't begin fishing until the next day. A total of 4 boats actually went fishing this year. Walker says a number of factors led to the low participation.
What we have had with this stock is a lot of uncertainty. We've had, of course, a fishery back in 2004 where everybody geared up for the fishery and the fish didn't return in the kind of numbers that we expected, so we didn't have a fishery. We had a very minimal decrease each year in the past 10 or so years of fish size, so we had an industry that was very unsure about the size of the fish and whether there would be a large enough size fish to be able to be marketable.
Walker would not disclose how much was harvested in the fishery due to Fish and Game confidentiality restrictions in effect when there are 3 or less processors involved in a fishery. He says only 1 processor participated. He could say the overall take was lower than the guideline harvest level of 1,276 tons. He says his office documented about 15.5 miles of active spawn during the fishery. Fish and Game had estimated nearly 12,000 tons of herring would return to West Beam this year. Walker says it appears the return was about on par with preseason estimates.
What we have right now is simply miles of spawn. And so looking at miles of spawn only and looking at the amount of fish that we saw throughout the area, it looks to be pretty close to what we expected to have come back. And so we had 15.5 nautical miles by the time we have gone out and all the spawn is finished. Probably will be somewhere around 16 miles of spawn, and that's a little bit more than what we had last year.
This was the first commercial sacro herring fishery in the West Beam Canal in 35 years. Icicle Seafoods will be back in Adak starting this summer. It announced that it will be taking over the onshore processing facility that was once run by Adak Fisheries, a company that has since gone bankrupt. Icicle had previously processed fish out of Adak, and plant landlord Aleut Enterprises approached the company to see if they had any interest in leasing the island's vacant facilities. Icicle subsequently signed a 25-year lease, and the company hopes to start processing Pacific cod as early as this summer. President Dennis Gulke.
The primary target date is to be ready for the 2012 cod season, but we do have people on the ground now really assessing the condition of the plant and readying it to operate. Our hope is it'll be operational, I'd say, sometime this summer. July 1 would be a great target date, but much will depend on how things come together over the next couple of months.
Gulke says that they plan to have between 15 and 25 people working out of there this summer, and that they should be employing 100 people once the facility is fully staffed. He adds that in addition to focusing on Pacific cod, ISCOL also plans to process some halibut and black cod. ADAC City Manager Leighton Lockett expects the presence of ISCOL to be a boon to the city's economy. He says that having a shore-based processing plant should help provide some long-term economic stability and increase the city's revenue through the raw fish tax.
With a company the size of ISCOL and their perceived reputation, a long-term lease like that gives us the confidence to be able to create budgets and make decisions based on having a long-term facility in place, which ultimately helps the community out as we can, make some of those decisions that you can't make when you have even a transient economy, much less a transient population.
Lockett adds that the deal may also help foster commerce by creating demand for a larger support sector. The opening of an ISCOL plant in ADAC could also have an effect on the pace of the Pacific cod fishery. Trent Hartle is a biologist with the Alaska Department of Fish and Game who helps manage the state waters fishery. He says that while the opening of ISCOL's ADAC plant could help speed up the Pacific cod bee season this summer, it's still too early to tell what the actual effect may be.
There may be an increase in effort or interest from the 60 and under fleet to go out there knowing that there is a shore-based processor. But as of now, I haven't heard of any boats that are interested in going out there just because of a new processor.
The processing plant at ADAC has been vacant since 2009 and at the center of multiple legal disputes between Aleut Enterprises, the city of ADAC, and former tenants ADAC Fisheries.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by the Alaska Marine Safety Education Association, providing hands-on safety training for all of Alaska's fishermen and their families. On the web at amsea.org. And by
the Pebble Partnership, pursuing jobs and opportunities for Southwest Alaska. Find out more at pebblepartnership.com.
You're listening to the Alaska Fisheries Report. Hear the whole show online at kmxt.org. For years, fishermen have observed sperm whales in Alaska waters, seeking out longline fishing gear as a source for easy meals. Now a $350,000 grant given to the Sitka Sound Science Center will let scientists and commercial longliners work together to figure out how to discourage the behavior. KCAW's Ed Ronco reports.
Sperm whales, it seems, have gotten into the habit of picking fish off commercial longlining gear. It's called depredation. Scientists think the whales are responding to the sounds of boats being put into gear.
So it's kind of like a dinner bell, and they can hear that from 10 miles away and come run right over to your vessel.
Tori O'Connell is operations manager at the Sitka Sound Science Center. She says the grant money will establish a bioacoustics lab in Sitka where scientists will study the distinct noises that sperm whales make when they're munching on someone's catch. She calls it a creek pause.
When whales are actually about to take a fish off a long line, they make a noise that's called a creak, and it actually sounds like a door creaking open like in a horror movie. And if that's followed by a pause, there's evidence that that is a depredation event. In other words, they have stopped doing all that noise because they are now going after a fish.
Researchers are going to count the creak pauses they hear and figure out how often the sperm whales are picking fish off the lines. And once they know that, the scientists and the fishermen can begin coming up with ways to prevent it from happening.
We're not trying to scare them away or scare them off completely, just trying to discourage them from interacting with our gear.
Dan Falvey has been longlining for 30 years.
What you do find is a large number of straightened hooks. You find some fish that come back that are bitten in half or have obvious tooth marks in them. And lots of times you just get a couple of heads here and there on the line. You know, pretty obvious that something big has been feeding on the fish.
O'Connell, back at the Science Center, says the program will hopefully find ways to prevent the whales from messing with the long lines, but that it also has benefits beyond the fleet.
We'll be doing active, meaningful local research. So this is going to directly benefit our local fleet. It's going to directly benefit the stock assessment scientists that work on sperm whales, and it's a collaboration between government scientists and fishermen. And so it's really what the Science Center is about.
And she says it will have educational benefits, too. Science Center staff already have talked about having science students from local high schools learn how to process the acoustic data. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Ed Ronco.
Last weekend, the Alaska State Legislature passed a statutory change aimed at helping Alaska communities qualify for grant money to repair or replace aging harbors that they've taken over from the state. Matt Lichtenstein has more from Petersburg.
The Senate Finance Committee added a provision in an unrelated bill to allow communities more leeway for the types of matching funds they can use in applying for a harbor construction grant from the State Department of Transportation. Specifically, it would let towns match with the state maintenance money they receive when they agree to take ownership of the facilities. That could make a big difference for Petersburg, where Glo Wallen is harbor master.
It means that we will be able to use the money that was given to Petersburg for deferred maintenance in the North Harbor as match money for other state funds. Prior to this, it was excluded from that opportunity. So we were sitting here with $2.5 million that we'd put in the bank, and it grew a little bit of interest, but that's all we had. Now we will be able to apply through the state harbor funding program to use that as a 50% match.
If the bill gets final approval from Governor Sean Parnell, Wallen is optimistic about Petersburg's chances of winning a 50% matching grant to replace North Harbor's half-century-old float system.
Because of the date of this harbor and the age of it, and that it had made it to the top rung of the DOT replacement process prior to them turning over the harbors to the municipalities, it stands a good chance. Everybody knows that the North Harbor here in Petersburg is one of the oldest ones out there.
Finance Committee Co-Chair Bert Stebbin of Sitka has been working with Petersburg on the issue for several years.
We were unable to get a solution with DOT through regulations, and the only option remained was a statutory change. So, you know, we had the opportunity to make that adjustment, and, you know, my staff had worked on this for quite a while. So I'm glad that we moved this thing forward and get it to a resolution. I remember that harbor when I was a little boy, you know, 6, 7 years old, 8 years old down there walking around with my granddad on the same old harbor.
The state built Petersburg's North Harbor in 1958. The city agreed to take ownership of the dilapidated facility in 2006 in exchange for the $2.5 million of maintenance money. But rather than trying to repair the structure, city officials decided it would make more sense just to replace it. Stedman agreed.
And if we didn't make the statute change, they would have had to take the money and put it into the old harbor, which said earlier, was ready to float down the Narrows, and it made absolutely no sense. So the city would have sat there with millions of dollars on the books that they could never use. So it was just one of these ridiculous situations that we needed to get rectified.
While Petersburg's concerns prompted the statutory change, other cities might benefit if they still have state maintenance money they receive when they accepted ownership of their harbors. How much cities will benefit will depend on how much money lawmakers decide to make available for the harbor grant program. The harbor language is part of House Bill 119, which is otherwise focused on a different issue, broadening the role that the Alaska Industrial Development and Export Authority can play in infrastructure projects around the state. The bill next goes to the governor for his signature. In Petersburg, I'm Matt Lichtenstein.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute, working to raise the value of our seafood harvest for the benefit of all Alaskans. On the web at alaskaseafood.org.
And that's all for this week's edition of the Alaska Fisheries Report. We had help from KRBD's Deanna Garrison in Ketchikan, KUCB's Alexander Gutierrez in Unalaska, KCAW's Ed Ronco in Sitka, and KFSK's Matt Lichtenstein, who I forgot to thank for his story last week, so thanks twice, Matt. From KMXT in Kodiak, I'm Jay Barrett.